Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, August 11. I'm your reader, Kathleen Jesperson, and the headline for today's Gazette, Winds of Destruction. Born west of Iowa and picking up intensity as it approached eastern Iowa, a horrifying storm Monday brewing gusts estimated at 100 miles per hour downed scores of trees, blew off roofs and walls, overturned trucks, and left thousands without power, likely for days. Some 50 people showed up at hospitals around the Cedar Rapids area with injuries, according to Cedar Rapids public safety spokesman Greg Bulow. Crews also responded to several incidents involving bone fractures and at least one head injury, he said. Cedar Rapids Mayor Brad Hart said his wife was hit as two trees fell onto his house. My wife got hit as she was running through the bedroom by the tree limb that's sticking through our ceiling, but she's okay, he said. With many neighborhoods impassable, the city of Cedar Rapids enacted a curfew from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. until further notice. The police department will be patrolling neighborhoods. We're asking for residents to stay at home for their safety so streets can be cleared of debris and fallen utilities, the city said in a statement. Iowa City did not announce any curfew. Cedar Rapids will also declare a disaster and seek state government assistance, city manager Jeff Pomerantz said. There's just destruction throughout the entire community. This is a very serious event, and we're taking every action to make sure that the city is restored to the best of our ability. Pomerantz said he wasn't immediately sure what the state assistance might yield, but said that we've all been suffering with the impact of COVID on our community, so this is just something additional to deal with. It's tough for people, it's tough for businesses, and it's hard for the city as well as the other services. Pat Garrett, a spokesman for Governor Kim Reynolds, said in a statement that the governor plans to give an update on storm damage at her 11 a.m. news conference Tuesday. Thousands in the region were left without electricity, and at least for some, it's almost certain to last for days. As of about 4:30 p.m., 95,270 out of 97,603 Alliant Energy customers in Linn County had power out. It was 9,399 out of 9,827 in Johnson County. MidAmerican Energy said about half of its 47,800 customers in Johnson County were without electricity. MidAmerican spokesman Jeff Greenwood said it will take some customers more than a day to have power restored. MidAmerican has requested assistance from other utilities for up to 2,000 workers. The storm affected much of the region, though, increasing the demand for utility help. Those utilities are going to be seeking assistance as well, Greenwood said. This is going to affect a lot of customers in the Midwest. When the storm passed through in about 2 hours, neighbors emerged with chainsaws to clear trees that blocked roads. People stopped their cars to get out and direct traffic. Municipal crews spread out in a daunting chore of clearing paths for traffic through what looked like a carpet of leaves and large debris. Among other developments, as local governments sought to cope with the destruction, all Cedar Rapids Community School District school buildings were closed to staff until further notice. Kennedy High School principal Jason Klein tweeted Monday that damage to that school was widespread, but no one was hurt. Pre-service and new teacher orientation, which began Monday, was postponed. So was a school board meeting, where it was expected that members would set a date to begin school. That meeting has not been rescheduled. Cedar Rapids Transit suspended bus service until Wednesday. Cedar Rapids postponed the city council meeting that was scheduled for today. The storm that first struck Des Moines and Ames is called a derecho, spelled D-E-R-E-C-H-O, a widespread and fast-moving straight-line windstorm. Unlike a tornado, a derecho can park over an area for some time, whipping it with rain and lashing winds. This derecho began quickly, about 7 a.m. in Nebraska. Only hours later, just after noon, the National Weather Service in the Quad Cities, which has also lost power, tweeted, "Widespread wind damage is being reported all over Cedar Rapids with 70 to 100 mile per hour winds. This is a strong and destructive storm. Please take cover now if you are in the path of this storm." Reports began flooding in to the Weather Service at 12:15 in Belle Plaine when 70 mile per hour winds were recorded. Vinton and Fairfield reported the same speeds, but higher wind gusts were reported elsewhere, including 100 miles per hour in Hiawatha, according to storm reports gathered by the Weather Service. Gusts over 100 miles per hour also knocked over several campers, along with the shelter roof at the park in Shellsburg, at approximately 12:58 p.m. Multiple transformers blew in Iowa City, and an 80-foot-long tree, about a foot in diameter, was reported snapped in Coralville. A trained spotter in Toddville reported an outbuilding tossed into a field and a large amount of corn damaged in the area. Clinton radio station KMCN reported roof damage with materials blown into an adjacent field, while 4 to 5 semi-trailers were blown over on Highway 61. Semis blew over in other locations as well. Earlier in the day, in a harbinger of what was soon to befall eastern Iowa, sirens blared through much of the Des Moines metro as winds clocked up to 99 miles per hour and swirling rain raged through central Iowa, knocking out internet connections for Iowans working in offices and homes and ripping most of the roof off a hockey arena in Urbandale. Officials with the State Department of Natural Resources reported damage at several state parks, prompting them to warn visitors to avoid the area or use extreme caution as staff work to assess the damage and begin cleanup. Here are reports of damage as seen by journalists from the Gazette throughout the day on Monday. In Marion, trees are down throughout town. Parts of South 11th Street are closed. Multiple downed power lines, apartments along Grand Avenue with chunks of the roof gone. Marion High School letters are torn off. The siding is ripped from multiple houses and apartment buildings, and a roof is torn off the historic Granger House. In Cedar Rapids, 3 semis overturned in the area of Archer Daniels Midland plant on the west side and another on its side along 16th Avenue Northwest. Power lines are down throughout the city. Wooden power poles are snapped or leaning. Trees are down, blocking major roads. There's major damage at Café Saint Pio, or Pio in the Czech village. Downtown lampposts and street signs are bent from the wind velocity. Trash bins, bike racks, and trash cans have blown around town. Many traffic lights are out and damaged. Partial building collapse is noted at 7th Street and 3rd Avenue Southeast. Roads into Wellington Heights are blocked and residents are directing traffic. Windows are broken out at the Serendipity store. Partial collapse of the old Diamond V facility in northwest Cedar Rapids. Street signs have been ripped out in many locations. Walls and roofs have blown off apartments near Westdale. There's flash flooding also in Westdale. Deep standing water on Mount Vernon Road east of 19th Street and 15th Street southeast was impassable between Mount Vernon Road and Beaver Avenue. At 111 Cottage Grove Avenue, which backs up to the Brucemore property, several trees were lost. Among them was a cucumber magnolia that property records indicate was at least 125 years old. And Iris Avenue, northwest in Cedar Rapids, was blocked off at all turns for several hours. In Iowa City, storm damage stretched from North Liberty south. Mature trees are fallen everywhere, crashing or crushing fences and damaging homes. Overturned trampolines are scattered about neighborhoods. Eastside Iowa City residents were helping with rakes, shears, and chainsaws, while dozens of tree branches are down near Willow Creek Park. A fallen tree blocked the path near the south entrance. A pair of fences at homes off West Benton Street were torn down in the wind, and a large tree was leaning against a home on Tagg Avenue, having just missed the home's front window, according to the homeowner. Downed trees and broken branches littered the University of Iowa Pentacrest, and a fallen tree blocked South Madison Street near the Memorial Union. Emergency personnel blocked intersections to remove trees and debris from the streets, and masked students sought shelter in what had been a largely empty Iowa Memorial Union. Many, many of the pictures in today's Gazette depict the downed trees and storm damage, including vehicles that are overturned. Community Kitchen helps cut costs for Iowa chefs. As 6-year-old Emma McLean was packing up to leave summer camp last month, she enthusiastically began telling her instructor, Sue Honkamp, about the dinner rolls her grandmother makes for special occasions, most recently the 4th of July. They were the same rolls she, her brother Jack, and 7 other campers with the cooking school Real Food for Kids had made that morning, along with turkey sliders and pasta primavera loaded with fresh veggies. The campers made all of Real Food for Kids meals from scratch using healthy, accessible ingredients. And they were all cooked in the event space and cafe at Kitchen Spaces, a recently opened community kitchen where Real Food for Kids and 10 other food-based businesses pay by the hour to use its kitchen for commercial kitchens. The Des Moines Register reports that since August 2019, Bob Mulvihill has been renting kitchen space to entrepreneurs who are looking to start their small businesses without huge capital investment needed to own or rent, remodel, and staff a building. Upfront costs for kitchen spaces is $700, $400 for a food license from the state, and $300 for an annual insurance policy. Renting and equipment a storefront, by comparison, could reach into the tens of thousands of dollars. It's a way for someone without the financial means to try something out, Mulvihill said. And I'll abbreviate the article since this is actually a Des Moines space. The concept of community kitchen has been around since the early 2000s, but only recently made its way to the Des Moines area. While Kitchen Spaces is the only for-profit community kitchen in the area, 2 others, both nonprofits, have been in operation for several years. And in another Iowa Today story, family accuses UI of locking hall doors without telling students. The University of Iowa freshman who froze to death during a polar vortex in early 2019 was captured on Burge Residence Hall surveillance video banging frantically for someone to let him into his dorm, according to a lawsuit his family filed this month against UI, the Board of Regents, and the state of Iowa. Gerald M. Bells, an 18-year-old Cedar Rapids Kennedy High School graduate, in his first year at the UI, had left his residence hall sometime after 12:45 a.m. January 30, a day forecast to be so cold the university took the unusual step of canceling class. When Bells was captured on video trying to re-enter Burge at 1:09 a.m., he's seen discovering the typically open entrance into a heated vestibule had been locked, compelling him to bang frantically on the door in an attempt to get the attention of someone who might help him enter, according to the lawsuit his parents filed August 5. The lawsuit discloses new details about what precipitated the student's death. The lawsuit accuses the university of locking exterior doors into Burge's warmer entry vestibules that night without warning residents, even though it, quote, knew or should have known, end quote, that failing to do so could cause harm to those residents, including Gerald Bells. The university also didn't put security personnel at the newly shuttered entrances, which the lawsuit states were locked to prevent pipes from freezing. No one came to Gerald's aid, and surveillance video captured him falling to the ground in front of the door at the northwest corner of Burge Hall, according to the lawsuit. Gerald's only safe harbor was the vestibules at the 4 primary entrances to Burge Hall due to other campus buildings being closed. 1 hour and 30 minutes later, at 2:48 a.m., Bells was found unresponsive outside Halsey Hall, an academic building about 3/10 of a mile down the T and Cleary Walkway from Burge. He was pronounced dead at the UI hospitals and clinics just after 4:30 a.m., having frozen to death within walking distance of Burge Hall, his parents report in their lawsuit. A Johnson County Medical Examiner report released last year indicated Bells died of hypothermia due to cold exposure and had evidence in his system of recent use of THC, a compound that is the main active ingredient in marijuana. The medical examiner ruled Bells' death was an accident, according to UI police. Temperatures that morning broke record lows, reaching 25 below zero, prompting schools across the corridor to cancel classes for days. Bells' family is suing the university, Regents, and the state in negligence involving their wrongful death allegation and for loss of the support, society, companionship, and consortium of their son. The University of Iowa accepted the duty and responsibility for the supervision and safety of the residents of Burge Hall, including Gerald Bells, according to the lawsuit. The lawsuit argues the UI failed in upholding its duty by, among other actions, locking the Burge doors, failing to tell its residents, failing to assign security personnel to the entrances, and failing to develop, update, and implement an appropriate emergency plan to reduce the risk of harm to students. In another Iowa Today story, Hiawatha man convicted of abusing girl. A 20-year-old Hiawatha man pleaded guilty Monday to sexually abusing a 14-year-old girl between December 29 and January 5. Nathan I. Giles, charged with third-degree sexual abuse, admitted during the plea hearing in Linn County District Court that he assaulted the girl. According to a criminal complaint, the girl gave details of the abuse during a forensic interview at St. Luke's Child Protection Center. When the victim sent a message to Giles after the incident and told him she was going to report him, Giles threatened to kill her, the complaint shows. Assistant Linn County Attorney Monica Slaughter said the defense was going to request a deferred judgment, but there is no agreement from the prosecution on sentencing until she reviews the pre-sentencing report conducted by the probation office. Sixth Judicial District Judge Jason Bessler said if the deferred judgment isn't granted by the sentencing judge, Giles would face 10 years in prison. Giles also would have to register as a sex offender for 10 years if he is granted the deferred judgment and probation. If he is sentenced to the prison term, he will have to register as a sex offender for life and may also have to serve a special sentence of parole following his probation of or prison term. Giles' sentencing is set for October 15. In another Iowa Today story, another storm story, storms leave devastation across the Midwest. A rare storm packing 100 miles an hour wind with power similar to an inland hurricane swept across the Midwest on Monday, blowing over trees, flipping vehicles, causing widespread property damage, and leaving more than 1 million without power as it moved through Chicago and into Indiana and Michigan. The storm, known as a derecho, lasted several hours as it tore from eastern Nebraska across Iowa and parts of Wisconsin and Illinois, had the wind speed of a major hurricane, and likely caused more widespread damage than a normal tornado, said Patrick Marsh, science support chief at the National Weather Service's Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma. Early Monday afternoon, the center issued a rare, quote, particularly dangerous situation, end quote, severe thunderstorm watch for eastern Iowa, northern Illinois, northwestern Indiana, and southern Wisconsin for the possibility of scattered significant gusts to 100 miles per hour. In northern Illinois, the National Weather Service reported a wind gust of 92 miles an hour near Dixon, about 100 miles west of Chicago, and the storm left downed trees and power lines that blocked roadways in Chicago and its suburbs. After leaving Chicago, the most potent part of the storm system moved over north-central Indiana by late afternoon. A derecho is not quite a hurricane. It has no eye, and its winds come across in a line. But the damage it is likely to do spread over such a large area is more like an inland hurricane than a quick, more powerful tornado, Marsh said. He compared it to a devastating super derecho of 2009, which was one of the strongest on record and traveled more than 1,000 miles in 24 hours, causing $500 million in damage, widespread power outages, and killing a handful of people. This is our version of a hurricane, Northern Illinois University meteorology professor Victor Gensini said. Gensini said this derecho will go down as one of the strongest in recent history and be one of the nation's worst weather events of 2020. It ramped up pretty quick, around 7 a.m. Central Time in eastern Nebraska. I don't think anybody expected widespread winds approaching 100 and 110 miles per hour, Marsh said. Several people were injured and widespread property damage was reported in Marshall County in central Iowa after 100-mile-an-hour winds swept through the area, said its Homeland Security Coordinator Kim Elder. She said the winds blew over trees, ripped road signs out of the ground, and tore roofs off of buildings. We had quite a few people trapped in buildings and cars, she said. She said the extent of injuries is unknown and that no fatalities have been reported. Elder said some people reported their cars flipping over from the wind, having power lines fall on them, and getting injured when hit by flying debris. Buildings also have caught on fire, she said. We're in life-saving mode right now. What makes a derecho worse than a tornado is how long it can hover in one place and how large an area the high winds hit, Marsh said. He said winds of 80 miles an hour or even 100 miles an hour can stretch for 20, 30, 40, or, God forbid, 100 miles. What happened is unstable, supermoist air was parked over the northern plains for days on end, and it finally ramped up Monday morning into a derecho. They are basically self-sustaining amoebas of thunderstorms, Gerenci said. Once they get going like they did across Iowa, it's really hard to stop those suckers. The storm raced over parts of eastern Nebraska before 9 a.m. Monday, dropping heavy rains and high winds. Strong, straight-lined winds pushed south into areas that include Lincoln and Omaha. National Weather Service meteorologist Brian Bargenbruck said, once that rain-cooled air hit the ground, it surged over 100 miles, sending incredibly strong winds over the area. Omaha Public Power District reported more than 55,500 customers without power in Omaha and surrounding communities. The Weather Service's Marsh said there's a huge concern about power outages that will be widespread across several states and long-lasting. Add high heat, people with medical conditions that require power, and the pandemic, it becomes dire pretty quickly. Moving to the Insight page, the guest column today is by the governor, Kim Reynolds. Can't let COVID-19 divide us. It's been 5 months since we learned of the first positive cases of COVID-19 in Iowa. Since then, our lives have been disrupted in ways we couldn't have imagined. Schools and businesses closed. A record number of Iowans were suddenly out of work. And our normal daily routines were turned upside down as we prioritized doing things differently to mitigate the spread of the virus. From the start, we've each had a role to play to protect our own health and that of our families, friends, and fellow Iowans. Early on, as cases were on the rise, Iowans dug deep and did their part, and it made a difference. Positive cases trended down, hospital capacity remained stable, businesses began to reopen, and life started to feel a bit more normal. But normal during a pandemic isn't the same normal as before. COVID-19 still is a reality, and circumstances still demand we do everything within our control to contain and manage it. Over the last several weeks, we've seen case counts ebb and flow, just as many other states across the nation have. And while we know that the majority of them are driven by young adults gathering socially, it's the unintended consequences of those activities that are cause for concern, especially the potential impact to vulnerable Iowans. Now is not the time to let our guard down. Iowa has a lot to gain by working together to keep communities healthy, especially now as we're preparing to safely return to school. Our individual actions will either keep us moving forward or put the progress we've made at risk. Preventive health measures are still the best defense against COVID-19. Wash your hands often and disinfect frequently used items. When you're in public, maintain social distance and wear a face mask if you're able. Stay home if you're sick, and please, carefully consider whether certain social or recreational activities are worth the risk. Just as importantly, if you or someone you were in close contact with tests positive for COVID-19, you're told to quarantine. Take it seriously. You have the ability to effectively stop the spread of the virus by isolating yourself from others during the full 14-day incubation period. These sacrifices seem small when compared to what's been asked of other generations of Iowans and Americans over the decades, but that doesn't mean it's easy. COVID-19 has tested each of us, and it will continue to, but we can't let it deter or divide us. When emotions are high and opinions are strong, it's important to take a step back and realize that we're all working toward the same goal. And even though we may not always agree on which path to take to get there, we are united in our desire to get back to the way of life we value as Iowans. We're all in this together. And again, that guest column today from Governor Kim Reynolds. At Liberty by Adam Sullivan. Politics will find you, like it or not. I wanted a vacation away from politics, but I didn't get it. I took last week off from writing columns for the Gazette in favor of a little staycation. I slept in, played a few of Eastern Iowa's beautiful disc golf courses, and drank more than a few cans of Busch Light. Most of all, I did my best to take a break from the soul-crushingly toxic politics that pervade Iowa life these days. The extra sleep, the outdoor recreation, and the light domestic beer were great. Ignoring politics proved more difficult. I remembered, as the Greek statesman Pericles observed more than 2,000 years ago, quote, "Just because you do not take an interest in politics doesn't mean politics won't take an interest in you," end quote. My girlfriend is a public school teacher, so despite my best efforts, I still caught a few minutes of Governor Kim Reynolds' news conference last week about returning to learning. I was taken aback to hear one of the governor's explanations for demanding in-person education in every Iowa school district this fall. Quote, "We haven't had eyes on those kids for quite some time now," end quote, Reynolds said last week. I don't have children, but I do have three young nephews I'm close to. The boys and their parents would be surprised to learn that the governor doesn't think they have had enough supervision this summer. I naively thought schools were for educating children, not conducting welfare surveillance on them. When I left my home of Johnson County for a short and socially distant road trip, my local board of supervisors was still at work, passing a mandatory face covering policy. Since my girlfriend and I do not share a household, we would be forced to wear masks or shields if we wanted to take a walk together in a county park. How romantic. The resolution, unanimously approved by the Johnson County Board of Supervisors, explicitly claims that the mandate is, quote, "not intended to be punitive or stigmatizing," end quote. But that language is immediately followed by the very punitive consequences of violating the ban. A simple misdemeanor, carrying a fine that starts at $105 and increases for subsequent offenses. Then I thought I'd take a few minutes to fill out my absentee ballot request form for the November election, but that too was tainted by bitter partisanship. My local Democratic county auditor is mailing forms with some of the information already filled in, a convenient setup that the Republican Secretary of State's office says is illegal. Even on my vacation from my job writing about the government, the damn government seemed to be everywhere. The governor wants to keep eyes on my family. The local sheriff's deputies and police officers will be keeping an eye on my face, and election officials are in a tizzy about my ballot. So, I sought respite from some good old consumer electronics. Bad news. The phone I recently purchased came loaded with the video editing service TikTok, which I was indifferent to until I found out President Donald Trump wants to ban it. The Chinese app does suffer from some security concerns, but the president ought to have no authority to dictate what software I can use on my own devices. No matter how hard you try to forget about the government will never forget about you. But at least the beer was cold. That Liberty by Adam Sullivan. And we have one community letter to the editor. Hinson Leitrim's behind. It's discouraging to see veterans' issues used as a political talking point when elections roll around. But what is even more disappointing is to see a politician not even have a stance on veteran issues and be brazen enough to copy and paste her policies from her opponent's website. Veteran issues are not buzzwords for a candidate to use in speeches every time an election rolls around. There are real issues that I and others who have served face daily. There are over 200,000 veterans in Iowa. Veteran concerns range from access to health care, resources for small businesses, mental health care, unemployment, access to VA facilities, and homelessness, to name just a few. Over 40% of our veterans in Iowa are over 65. The bulk of Iowa's veterans are Vietnam vets. It's important to understand the specific concerns associated with their service. These men and women have served their country and now are in need of legislators to make sure they have the care and resources they need. For Ashley Hinson to plagiarize is certainly concerning, but to not have her own thoughts on veterans' issues is unforgivable. Iowa's veterans deserve better. And that letter is signed by Ben Hansen of St. Lucas. You have been listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, August 11, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. In short notices, just one today from Fairbank. Rosemary A. Wilkinson, age 60, died Wednesday, August 5. The White Funeral Home in Independence is in charge. And on to the longer notices from Cedar Rapids. Marveline Mary Hess, age 87, died Saturday, August 8th at St. Luke's Hospital after declining health. Private family services will be held at St. Patrick's Catholic Church by the Reverend Ivan Nienhaus. Burial at St. John's Cemetery. Again, that notice for Marveline Mary Hess. Also from Cedar Rapids, Timothy James Hale, age 69, passed away Saturday, August 8, at home with his family by his side after a 3-year battle with renal cancer. Tim has requested no funeral services. Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Service is serving the family. Again, that notice for Timothy James Hale. And from West Springfield, Virginia, Paula Inez Forrest, age 85, passed away on the morning of July 29 in Falls Church, Virginia. A memorial service will be held sometime in 2021 due to the current COVID-19 pandemic. Again, that notice for Paula Inez Forrest. From Quasquetan, Martin or Marty Kress, age 61, died Sunday evening, August 9, at Manor Care Center in Waterloo. Private family funeral services will be held at the Fawcett Schmitz Funeral Home in Winthrop. Interment will be at the Quasquetan Cemetery. Marty's family will host a celebration of life from 1 to 3 Friday, August 14, at Wolfie's Wopsie Outback. Again, that notice for Marty or Martin Kress. And from Cedar Rapids, Thomas J. Wilkinson, Jr., age 86, passed away peacefully Saturday, August 8. A celebration of life will be held when the pandemic is over and we can travel, gather, and hug without danger and fear. Arrangements are with the Stuart Baxter Funeral Memorial Service in Cedar Rapids. Again, that notice for Thomas J. Wilkinson, Jr. There are several obituaries also listed in the Iowa City Press Citizen today. From North Liberty, Nellie Rains, age 87, passed away on August 6 at Keystone Place in North Liberty, following a long journey with Alzheimer's and other health issues. Private graveside service will be held at Oak Hill Cemetery in Tiffin, Iowa. Again, that notice was for Nellie Rains. From Iowa City, Alberta M. Close, age 88, died Thursday, August 6th at Mercy Hospital. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Friday, August 4, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Hills, followed with burial at St. Stanislaus Cemetery near Hills. There will be a time of visitation for family and friends from 9 o'clock until services at the church on Friday. Again, that notice for Alberta M. Cruz. And lastly, Dean Lipkamen from Solon, age 85, passed away Thursday, August 6th at the Solon Care Center. Graveside services will be at 3 p.m. Saturday, August 15th at the Oakland Cemetery in Solon. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 Friday at Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City. Again, that notice for Dean Lipkamen. Moving to the sports page for today. On the front page of the Iowa City Press-Citizen, sources say the Big Ten is primed to cancel the fall football season on Tuesday. The Big Ten is expected to cancel the college football season in a historic move that stems from concerns related to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Multiple people with knowledge of the decision told the Free Press. "It's done," one high-ranking source in the Big Ten said Monday afternoon. Sources said the presidents were in agreement Sunday to end fall sports in the conference. Michigan and Michigan State, which both have physicians as presidents, were among the schools in favor of ending the fall seasons, sources said. Multiple sources said early Monday morning that presidents voted 12-2 to end the season, though the Big Ten said Monday afternoon no official vote had taken place. Dan Patrick, who first reported the 12-2 vote, said on his radio show that Iowa and Nebraska were the two schools in favor of playing. According to the Lansing State Journal, the Big Ten presidents were expected to meet again Monday at 6 p.m. to formally vote on ending the season. One Free Press source said Monday afternoon the schools are expected to collectively move forward in the same direction. The sources requested anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly on the decision. A formal announcement is expected today, multiple sources said. The situation remains fluid as the Big Ten tries to coordinate its announcement with other Power Five conferences. The Chicago Tribune reported around noon that a big top level Big Ten source texted that, quote, "no final decisions have been made," end quote, while the Columbus Dispatch reported as of 12:25 p.m. that Ohio State had not yet been ordered to suspend practices. The move comes 2 days after the Mid-American Conference became the first in the FBS to cancel its season. In local sports news, high school volleyball, COVID-19 erases celebrations. Volleyball lends itself to socialness, not social distancing. Upon every point, both teams congregate at the center of their respective sides of the court for congratulations or consolation. Probably not this year. "We've talked about this being a year of adjustment," said Trisha Carty, high school head coach at Iowa City High. The Little Hawks were among 300-plus high school teams in Iowa that began practice Monday, meeting from 7:30 to 9:30 in the morning and noon to 2 in the afternoon. "It's good to get back in the gym," said Michaela Ribble, a junior setter. "Our word of the day is family," and that's capital family. "It's just different to show family like this." With the high school gym under renovation, the varsity is practicing at Southeast Junior High. It's inconvenient, yes, but it's air-conditioned. Other than the end of the morning practice, when they went through a 6-on-6 scrimmage, the Little Hawks were masked up. "Instead of talking, everybody has to yell," senior defensive specialist Maya Morella said. "As a defensive player, I have to talk a lot. When I yell, the mask sometimes comes down." City High is coming off a 17-15 season in 2019. The Little Hawks are still reeling from the July 6th death of middle hitter Emma Nugent. "Everything with Emma showed that nothing can be taken for granted," Carty said. "Everything you should be grateful for." Emma embodied what we want City High volleyball to be. She was a hard worker. Nugent's death has further galvanized a team that Carty said was, quote, "a pretty tight-knit group," end quote. "Anyway, our season is dedicated to her," Morales said. The Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union recently published a lengthy list of coronavirus-related guidelines. Among them, pre- and post-match Handshakes between teams are prohibited. Teams should acknowledge their opponents with a wave, a bow, or other pleasantry after introductions and or after the match. Teams will not switch benches between sets unless officials determine that a distinct disadvantage is present on one side of the net. All players must sanitize their hands before and after warm-ups, at all timeouts, between sets, and any time they leave the playing court. Coaches are strongly encouraged to sanitize their hands as often as possible as well. Competition for Iowa High Schools begins August 24. Defending state champions are Cedar Falls in Class 5A, Sergeant Bluff Luton in Class 4A, Mount Vernon in 3A, Western Christian in 2A, and Sydney in 1A. City High, meanwhile, can probably be viewed as a long shot to reach the U.S. Cellular Center. Quote, "We're going into this, we're the underdogs," end quote, Morales said. "But we're getting stronger, and I think we're going to have a really good season." In high school baseball, Marion and Xavier land two on the first-team All-State. Owen Puck and Gage Frank of Marion and Cedar Rapids Xavier's Nick Banowitz and Jack Lux earned first-team Class 3A All-American honors Monday from the Iowa High School Baseball Coaches Association. Austin Hilmer and Lucas Voss of North Lynn earned first-team honors in Class 2A, and Brody Wolf of HLV was named to the 1A honor squad. Second-team picks are also listed, and the complete first teams and all area players in 2B can be accessed online. New field, familiar faces at Williamsburg. The core of the team that reached state semifinals returns. The football season officially began shortly after sunrise for Williamsburg. The Raiders' wake-up call had them at the field at 6:30 a.m. to kick off their season. "We're a morning team," Williamsburg coach Kurt Ritchie said. "Get work done early." "Our enthusiasm and excitement have been top-notch. This team is just excited to get back together and has great chemistry so far." Programs from across the state opened fall sports with the first official day of practice on Monday. Williamsburg's morning workout was one of the few to be held in the corridor because many were canceled due to storms that ravaged parts of the area. "It felt really good getting the guys all together," Raiders leading passer and tackler last season Levi Weldon said. "We have a lot of talent this year." The Raiders have plenty to be psyched about for this season. In addition to the strong nucleus from a team that went 8-4 and reached the state semifinals, the school completed renovations that included an 8-lane track, ticket booth with signage, and sharp-looking field turf, finished the first week of July. Weldon said the new surface could produce faster play. Senior Riley Holt said the Raiders are ready to put on a show for everyone that comes to see it. "It was great," Holt said. "We're fortunate enough to get nice stuff like this. We get a chance to use it this year. It's beautiful. It looks like something out of a movie." Ritchie noted that the surface has multifaceted benefits. It helps marching band, physical education classes, especially with social distancing efforts, and the soccer programs. "It's incredible to see all the support we have from all the donations," Williamsburg's Luke Peters said. "It's just awesome." The Raiders ranked among the Class 2A leaders in various categories, including special teams, interceptions, third with 19 and 4 returned for touchdowns, ranked fourth in rushing TDs with 33, and sacks, 23.5, and ranked fifth with 62 total TDs. Weldon returns with 632 passing yards and 11 scores. Brody Wardenburg returns with 505 and 7. Alex Redson and Wardenburg are the top two in receiving yardage back. "We're all excited to get the season going," Peters said. "Not every state is able to have a season. We're just making the most of it and getting out there to play football." Holt led the Raiders with 8 sacks, and his 292 rushing yards is the most of any returning player. Weldon had 65 tackles a year ago with 4.5 sacks. Holt had 43 stops. We believe this team can compete with anyone on our schedule, Richie said. We will be young and inexperienced at a few spots, but feel the talent is there. Our job is to prepare hard enough to play with great confidence. Is this a dome team? That is yet to be seen, but we believe one thing. By the time playoffs come around, we will believe we can play like a dome team. And in another sports story, players lend their hand after storms ravage the area. Severe weather that ripped through eastern Iowa Monday caused widespread damage and power outages. Area high schools and sports facilities were not spared. The effects of violent storms forced some football programs to cancel the first day of practice and left some schools with needed repairs. Benton Community's football complex was thrashed by high winds and rain. Everything is gone, Benton Community AD Sean Fiffner said. The press box, new scoreboard, fencing, trees, roof to the school at Van Horn, Keystone and Norway with lots of damage. There were reports of destruction to North Cedar's press box and Cedar Rapids Xavier's baseball and softball fields. Cedar Rapids Washington's coach, Morris Blue, said practice was scratched and the school suffered roof and tree damage. The old gymnasium experienced flooding. Cedar Rapids Jefferson and Cedar Rapids Prairie canceled opening workouts. Prairie coach Mark Bliss said the school suffered wind damage, while Jefferson's Chris Busing said the lower Kingston area was littered with downed trees. Workouts were secondary, following the afternoon front. Some were ready to lend a hand to others in the community. Iowa City High and Mount Vernon football teams announced the cancellation of practice via Twitter, encouraging players to help members of their community clean up. Cedar Rapids Kennedy coach Brian White said the storms had a program-wide impact. All of our kids have damage for the most part, White said, so we're all just trying to take care of immediate stuff first. Moving to the Business 380 page, Collins Aerospace to lay off 72 Iowa employees. With sales numbers slumping, the company enacts furloughs and hiring freezes. Collins Aerospace, Cedar Rapids' largest employer, will lay off 72 employees September 4, according to a notice filed with the Iowa Workplace Development or Workforce Development. The company had announced the layoffs July 30, but did not indicate at that time how many employees would be affected. The number was listed in a worker adjustment and retraining notification filed with Iowa Workforce Development on July 30. The cuts come amid declining sales numbers during the coronavirus pandemic. The company's operating profit was down 125% in the second quarter. The company already has implemented voluntary separation agreements, furloughs, pay cuts, a hiring freeze, and a cancellation of any merit pay increases, according to an email obtained by the Gazette that Collins Aerospace President Stephen Tim sent to all employees July 31st. Tim said the cuts primarily affect Collins Aerospace's commercial business functions. As difficult as this decision is, resizing our workforce is necessary for Collins to better align with future business demand in this evolving environment and to position the company for long-term success, Tim said in the email. Meanwhile, we will continue to maximize opportunities on the military and defense side of Collins, which remains strong. Collins Aerospace is expected to give laid-off employees 1 week of severance pay for each year served at the company, according to a document obtained by the Gazette from a laid-off worker in Alabama after the company terminated an undisclosed number of employees 2 weeks ago. Employees also will receive between $3,000 and $6,000 in a transition payment, according to the document. A spokeswoman from Collins Aerospace declined to comment on the document obtained by the Gazette, but said in a statement Thursday that the affected employees will receive a separation payment, transition payment, and continuation of benefits, in addition to outplacement services to support impacted employees through the transition. And in another Business 380 page article, Job openings saw a surprise rise in June. U.S. job openings unexpectedly increased in June, and hiring maintained a solid pace as state economies continued with reopening efforts. The number of available positions climbed to 5.89 million during the month from a revised 5.37 million in May, according to the Labor Department's Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey released on Monday. The median forecast in a Bloomberg survey of economics called for 5.3 million openings. Openings that involve workers recalled from layoffs or positions that are only offered internally are not counted in the figure. Hiring eased to 6.7 million in June with a record 7.2 million a month earlier. While hires edged down, they still were the second largest on record. The number of hires, which does include rehired employees, increased 503,000. Openings also rose 71,000 in the healthcare and social assistance industry. Vacancies declined in construction and state and local government education. That does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, August 11. I'm your reader, Kathleen Jesperson. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. With half a dozen measles outbreaks currently underway in the U.S., as well as several serious international outbreaks, the news on measles vaccine from Denmark is important. Researchers conducted a nationwide study that included everyone born between 1999 and 2010. With more than 650,000 children in that group, they had more than 5 million person-years of follow-up. The Danish health system keeps excellent records on all of its citizens, including the children. Consequently, the scientists are confident that the 6,517 children diagnosed with autism during the study period are all the children who developed this condition. Children who did not receive the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or MMR, were equally likely as vaccinated children to develop autism. The investigators conclude, the study strongly supports that MMR vaccination does not increase the risk for autism, does not trigger autism in susceptible children, and is not associated with clustering of autism cases after vaccination.
The Food and Drug Administration has just approved a completely new type of antidepressant. The nasal spray, called esketamine, is expected to help people who have not responded to standard antidepressants. It will be marketed under the brand name Spravato. This drug is chemically related to the injectable anesthetic ketamine that's been on the market since 1970 and is available generically. Although S-ketamine is administered as a nasal spray, people will not be permitted to purchase it for home use. They will need to use Spravato under medical supervision at a clinic or doctor's office. Some experts have challenged the FDA's approval process for S-ketamine. While two clinical trials demonstrated some benefit, two others did not show that S-ketamine is better than placebo. Side effects of this novel antidepressant include nausea, dizziness, headache, and a feeling of dissociation.
FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb unexpectedly announced his departure from the agency this week. Experts were puzzled by his announcement since he has received high marks from the administration, industry, and even some consumer groups. Dr. Gottlieb has raised questions about teen vaping and has been an outspoken critic of pharmacy chains that sell tobacco products to minors. Some commentators speculate that these stances might be related to his abrupt departure. His explanation for the sudden departure is that he wants to spend more time with his wife and young children. Dr. Gottlieb is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Another week, another drug recall. Many lots of ARB blood pressure drugs, including losartan, valsartan, and irbesartan, have been recalled over the past 8 months. These medicines were contaminated with potential carcinogens known as NDMA and NDEA. Now, Hetero Labs has recalled 87 lots, and Tarrant Pharmaceuticals Limited is recalling 100 lots of losartan tablets. These pills contain an entirely new contaminant just identified as NMBA. It, too, is a suspected carcinogen. All three of these nitrosamine contaminants are apparently created as a result of the manufacturing process. FDA Commissioner Gottlieb stated, "We're making important strides at understanding how these impurities form, and we're continuing to examine if nitrosamine impurities may also arise during the manufacture of other ARB drug products. The FDA is committed to implementing measures to prevent the formation of these impurities during drug manufacturing processes in the future."
Cocoa flavonoids may have some benefit for people with multiple sclerosis, according to a small study. Previous research showed that dark chocolate rich in cocoa compounds might improve symptoms of chronic fatigue. The investigators recruited 40 people with relapsing remitting MS to drink cocoa every day for 6 weeks. 19 of them got high flavonoid cocoa, while 21 drank low flavonoid cocoa. At the end of the study, those on the high flavonoid cocoa had slightly less fatigue and could walk somewhat farther in 6 minutes than they had at the outset. They also reported less pain. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.